Good afternoon. This is BoobTube, where two chicks talk speculative fiction or science fiction, fantasy television, or pretty much any show that falls into that category because we happen to like it or it's really just sort of blown our minds.
We like it a lot.
Yeah. I'm Heather Long, and this is my partner in crime and sister from another mother, Shireen Nicole.
Hi.
Let's talk about a little bit about what we're going to discuss today. We've got Alphas, the great episode that almost was. Merlin, the wonderful BBC series that's getting ready to return. And for those Game of Thrones fans out there, Tyrion runs the game, or season two. And is Lost Girl really worth a look? Personally, I think yes. But anyway, moving on. Let's talk about some Doctor Who, Haven, Warehouse 13, and Revolution. And if we have time, I want to talk about Big Bang Theory, but only for a minute. In the meanwhile, you might hear us talking a little bit about What the Fuckery, which is, oh, I really shouldn't have said that. It's WTFery.
Everybody cusses, so yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so What the Fuckery, or what the hell were they thinking? Not sure I have anything on the list for that today, but be prepared. We do talk about it. We have some panty twisters, which are all those good and shocking moments. And then we're going to give you a little rundown about the shows coming up. Be aware, we will spoil episodes if we've watched them. So if you hear us beginning to talk about a show that you have not seen and you're one of those people who cannot stand to be spoiled, time to turn the volume down. But if you're like us and you want to hear, turn it right up.
Yeah, we are definitely going to be having some River Song moments. So spoilers, darling.
All right, Shireen, would you like to kick us off with the great episode of Alphas that almost was?
Okay, Alphas, I was surprised they did not cancel this season because it just never quite reaches the highs it promises on. I've heard a lot of people call it the X-Men of Sci-Fi Network. I don't know if I agree with that, but I can see where that comes from because the Alphas all have powers. There's several factions among them. The ones that believe that they should be superior by any means necessary, and the ones who think that they should work with the humans. So yes, there are some X-Men correlations. But what works best about Alphas is when it delves into character development. They have some really interesting people, and their lives have had a lot of tragedy because of their superpowers. Especially, and I wonder what you think about this, Heather, with the female characters. They know how to build great women and varied women with the whole slew of personalities and backstories, which you don't get to see a lot of on other sci-fi shows. What do you think?
Well, I think in part, we saw some of that back in first season with their female characters. I think they've done a great job when they bring in their, what I would call stunt casting or genre casting, up to and including having great character actresses like Lindsay Wagner guest star, even in little blips and moments. But second season, in all honesty, I have to wonder if the continued explosion in the development is due in large part to a set of writers who did it so very well for so very long on Eureka. As Alphas inherited a good chunk of Eureka's writing cast, their production crew, and their directors, you know, I was on the fence about Alphas at the end of its first season, and I think second season it's definitely shown a lot stronger. I think they would be better off focusing on their human element, though.
I would agree. On this past episode, they introduced a character named Agnes, who was very, very good. Season one, they introduced the head of Red Flag.
Red Flag,
and she was amazing, and you never saw that coming. And then the core cast has some great women in the form of, Heather, help me out.
Nina and Rachel.
And as Heather and I were talking about a bit before the show, Nina is a wonderful Shades of Grey character, as Heather said, and she'll pick up there.
Yeah, Nina is a very varied character because she has the ability to push people to basically say something to them, and they will go do what she has told them to do. Being a little bit of a carefree character, she has been known in the past to steal cars.
To go on shopping sprees.
On shopping sprees, tell people who really annoy her to go do things that are really rude to them. But she's never been vicious.
No, not at all.
Not at all. She's never been, I mean, even when she's manipulating, she's not a vicious character. She is a little narcissistic, a little self-serving, but you also get the feeling that she cut off her arm to help the people around her. And there's a certain inherent loneliness in the fact that she can compel anybody to do anything. You know, she can't normally compel other Alphas. I mean, sometimes she can, sometimes she can't. That varies.
There are certain people who are push resistant.
Yes, and those frustrate her, which is actually kind of entertaining when that happens.
The other character on the team is Rachel, who has super senses. Her senses are turned up to 11. And this is very trying for her because she comes from a traditional family. They want to protect her and shelter and cloister her. She's very much trying to find her own way in the world and deal with these abilities that are sometimes debilitating. Lots and lots of layers.
It's important to remember, too, as far as Rachel is concerned, for her to turn one sense up, she has to dial all the others down. So, for example, if she is looking or examining evidence, like trace evidence on the floor, and she enhances her vision, her hearing shuts down, her sense of smell, her taste, all of that closes off. And it makes her actually, of the team members, probably one of the most vulnerable ones because she has tremendous blind spots when she's working.
Well, as you guys can see, this makes for some pretty interesting women, as witness when they introduced the leader of Red Flag in season one. Totally unexpected. Fantastic character. I don't really want to get into it if you haven't seen it, because that's something you need to discover for yourself. But in this latest episode, The Devil Will Drag You Under, you get the big bad, a guy named Parrish, and the alphas have executed what I thought was a brilliant undercover operation. Again, I won't spoil too much for you, but it was brilliant. The episode is going magically. Dr. Rosen's daughter needs saving. Hicks has fallen in love with her. And the way that they play this out introduces a new character by the name of Agnes, who for the X-Men fans out there is very much like a rogue. She has this ability to touch people and rip their minds open, but she cannot control it. Touch is touch. And again, you get the sense that this character has a wealth of background. This episode was completely run by the women and their motivations. There is also a character on the show, very similar, again, for you comic book fans, to a character in the Umbrella Academy, written by Gerard Way, who you may also know as the lead singer of My Chemical Romance. She has the ability to whisper something to you, which is different from Nina's ability. She makes suggestions you simply cannot deny. She whispers them to you, though. It has to be in your ear. It's like she's telling you a rumor. Watch Alphas for that reason, but the show fell apart in one of the most stupid moves a character could ever make. Dr. Rosen's daughter bargaining for her life, and she tells the villain the exact thing that makes her disposable. Now, how that ends up, you'll have to watch the show and see. So we'll move on from Alphas and dive into, where do you want to go next, Heather?
Let's go ahead and talk about Haven, actually.
Okay.
Haven just returned for its third season. Haven is a sci-fi show, airs on Friday nights. The first episode of third season just recently aired last Friday. Haven is a small town in Maine where the people are troubled. Some are, some aren't. And troubles usually manifest in different powers. And then the main leads of the show are Nathan, the sheriff, who can't feel anything. He can't feel physical pain. He can't feel physical touch. He has no ability to actually feel anything. And then his boyhood nemesis slash adult antagonist, who, as it turns out, Duke's a bit of a rogue, bit of a pirate.
He's totally a pirate.
And kind of guy who's a man about town. He's got his fingers in every pie. He's always doing something that's just a little bit on the shady side of the law. But it also, as it turns out, Duke is descended from a line that is also troubled. And he has the ability to end the troubles. It's just what they call the powers. In a family's line by killing that person. And when he kills that person, the power is not then inherited by anyone else in their family line. And his father was a hunter. And then these two disparate souls who are constantly at odds are brought together by their mutual affection for a character that I had a very difficult time liking when I first met her, but who has since grown on me. And that would be Audrey Parker. Now, Audrey Parker is an enigma. Audrey Parker is not affected by the troubles. She can help people with the troubles, get through to them. And Nathan can feel her. She doesn't get blasted by other things. She doesn't necessarily get her mind warped by other people's abilities because she is immune. Audrey Parker also apparently has disappeared and reappeared over the years as different people, always looking exactly the same, and doesn't have any memories of these lives. In fact, the life she's living now, she is actually taken from another person entirely. And we've met that character back in season two, but I'm going to talk about season three so we don't spend a whole long time on this. Season three opened with probably one of the weirdest episodes of Haven I've ever seen, and that is saying something.
Yes, it was engaging, though, because I'm not always the biggest fan of Haven. It sometimes bores me to tears. So this episode kept me.
Yeah, at the end of the second season, in the season two finale, Audrey and Nathan had finally made a date, for those of you interested in any of the romantic entanglements there. And yes, there is a bit of a love triangle, but they don't focus on it that much. But these two have finally decided they're going to have dinner and drinks and spend the evening together. And when Nathan shows up, Audrey has been taken. She was zapped by a taser and we didn't see who took her. Audrey wakes up strapped to a pole in the middle of this abandoned house, and there's a man questioning her about the Colorado kid.
He's also making it rain. Not just kidding. She's not stripping on the pole. She's actually kidnapped.
Yeah, there you go. She is actually kidnapped. Now, this mysterious figure whom we do not see questions her extensively about the Colorado kid. Now, the Colorado kid, for those of you who have never seen Haven, is the actual story written by Stephen King that inspired this series. It's a great little short. If you ever get a chance to read it, it's Stephen King and probably one of his finest stories, because it really does suck you in for something so short. Now, Audrey doesn't remember the Colorado kid. That was from a previous visit to Haven. In the meanwhile, back at the ranch, Duke and Nathan are duking it out, pardon the pun, in this really hysterical fight scene that ends with all the metal in the place, including a gun, stuck to the ceiling, and both of them look at each other like, who's doing that?
Right.
You know, and as Nathan points out, as he's pounding on Duke, I don't feel pain, so I can do this all day long. No, so they're both desperate to find Audrey, so
they team up
to deal with a case where there are aliens coming.
Crop circles.
Nathan gets pulled off into the woods and gets jerked all the way across all this grass, visible kind of chain, with Duke racing after him, which was actually pretty funny when you consider the fact that the two of them had just been beating the crap out of each other. Then they look around and even these two men who have seen a lot in Haven are looking at the crop circles going, what the hell? Now, that said, it had a lot of great elements. The gentleman with his troubles was apparently creating all of this based on his paranoia and his obsession with aliens and
his grandfather's obsession, because he inherited his grandfather's board with all of his newspaper clippings and research pinned to it.
And when he was a child, which would have been about the time of the last time the Troubles were active in the area, his grandfather went missing and he believed kidnapped by aliens. This is where the episode gets a little uneven for me. And as much as I wanted to like it, Audrey, while she is chained up and being tortured and tormented by this guy about the Colorado kid, although there wasn't a lot of torture, it was more implied than we saw, was also talking to a woman through the wall who we don't know whether or not she was actually there. The woman, as it turns out, was the young man's mother, who had also been taken. And then Audrey hears her being murdered, and Audrey is, of course, distraught because she can't help her, or what Audrey thinks is her being murdered. And then by the time she gets free, Duke and Nathan find her, and then they find the woman's body burning in the pit. Now, we still, again, never see the shadowy man again. We never know for sure if this woman is there. The young man's troubles, he's bringing in a giant spaceship that's going to crash, and according to the last clip they read, it wipes out this whole area. And there's this conflict between Nathan and Duke over what to do about the guy. Now, typically, this is Audrey's job. Audrey would be the one who talks this guy down, but Audrey is in so much shock from being kidnapped, from the woman dying, it's like she can't really wrap her mind around it. And Duke's willing to kill him. Nathan doesn't want him to die. Nathan ends up convincing him to go off with the aliens like his grandfather did, so he basically is taken by his own trouble and disappears, and it ends. And it's you're left with the question, so what's the difference between killing him and ending the troubles in his family line forever, or letting his troubles take him off? That's the big question. There's also this sort of huge distraction. I mean, Nathan is so grateful to find Audrey again, and Audrey's just so not focused on Nathan at this point. It's all about the Colorado kid. It's all about what's happened. But for coming back after being gone, it was a good way to hook the new viewers in, because it had a lot of what's hurry going on.
It did, and in a good way.
In a great way. So back to you, Shereen. What are you up for next?
What I would like to get into next is just a sidebar mention that Merlin is returning soon. And yes, it's wacky and goofy and sweet and family, and it has huge holes in the plot, and yet somehow it just works. It's a delightful show. They've promised to get darker this season, so be on the lookout for that. Really quickly, I'd like to nod to Game of Thrones Season 2, which ended this summer on HBO. Someone called it Tyrion Runs Game. They called the entire season that, and I have to tell you, the character of Tyrion in this season, he ruled it. There were a lot of disappointments for me. Characters just didn't develop the way I would have liked them to. There was still a lot of action and tremendous amounts of political intrigue, which Game of Thrones does so well. And one of the things about George R.R. Martin, which I think is what grabs people, if you're listening to this show, you probably have some type of love of epic fantasy. What George R.R. Martin does so well and what has translated into the series Game of Thrones is most people call out the incest first. Oh my God, George R.R. Martin loves incest. But what he really excels at are the factors of human nature that make us all uncomfortable. Our propensity for betrayal and murder and for incest. But he delves deeply into those things that make us uncomfortable about ourselves. And that's why people cannot stop watching. The character of Tyrion, one of the sons of the Lannister family and actually a dwarf, he has been trod upon by damn near the entire cast, although those who pay attention respect his intellect. And so to watch him through various machinations, maneuver everybody, and then to, at the end of the season, lose big, really good way to go with this season of Game of Thrones. You have thoughts, Heather? No, she does not have thoughts. Okay, so she's going to tell you what she does have thoughts on. She's ashamed.
Bad watchers who haven't actually watched Game of Thrones yet. It's on that list of things that I need to watch but have not.
She has shame, America. She has shame.
Where is it proudly? Because by the time she gets to watch it, there'll be several seasons out and I won't have to wait. But anyway.
We're going to stitch a Scarlet TV Guide logo to her lapel.
That would be fun to wear. Yeah, I want to talk about Warehouse 13. We are about to, as we record this, wind up the first half of Warehouse 13 Season 4, which arguably has probably been one of the strongest seasons to date for this series. And we did talk about it a little bit in our first show, Warehouse 13 and the premise behind it and the gathering of artifacts. This season kicked off with the destruction, or the season finale for Season 3 kicked off with the destruction of the warehouse. Thanks in no small part to Anthony Michael Hall's wonderful turn as a psychotic villain. With this season, in order to save it, because they did a lovely little twist that Pandora's box was housed inside the warehouse. With the destruction of Warehouse 13, the death of Mrs. Frederick, and then the subsequent deaths or trapping of various warehouse agents, the world was going to fall into chaos.
The death of H.G. Wells, who is one of our favorite characters.
Yeah, well, she sacrificed herself to save others. So Artie, who is played by the delightful Saul Rubinek, who even when he plays a little sleazy character, he's so much fun to watch. And as Artie, he's so over the top and yet so smart. And, you know, he's just a really great character. Artie makes a very difficult decision, and he takes an item that allows him to turn back time a full 24 or 48 hours. It's called Magellan's Astrolabe. So he uses this, and he is warned by Brent Spiner, who in another delightful piece of guest casting, and Brent Spiner has been a semi-regular this season, playing a character named Brother Adrian, who warns him that he will unleash a darkness within himself, or a darkness within the world that he cannot contain, and it will haunt him for the rest of his days. And Artie feels that this is a worthy sacrifice if it saves the warehouse, if it saves his friends, if it saves the world. So this entire these last nine episodes, and we're about to get to episode 10, and then we will have a pause until April of 2013. Allow me to apply to my complaints right now, sci-fi, sippy, whatever you want to call them.
Sippy.
But throughout these last nine episodes, we have watched Artie struggle with Brother Adrian hunting him. Brother, you know, he's driven, he dearly kills Vanessa, who is played by the lovely Lindsay Wagner.
Yes, the bionic woman.
That's the bionic woman. He nearly kills Vanessa. He nearly kills Hugo, played by the fabulous Renee Auberjonois. For those of you listening, if you have not watched Warehouse 13, and if you have ever liked anything sci-fi over the years at all, check it out. They have great guest casts, including Kate Mulgrew, Jeri Ryan, and Farhan Tahir, who plays Hassan, the head of the Regents. He was also the captain in Star Trek, the new reboot by J.J. Abrams in the first part of the movie, and he also played the villain in Iron Man. But anyway, that's a total aside. Getting back to this, so we've gone through this whole season as there's been really great dramatic moments, and there's been some really, you know, bad mind games, but all of Artie's work is being, over the years in the warehouse is being deconstructed by Brother Adrian, or so he believes.
All of the artifacts are, in fact, reappearing in the world and needing to be recaptured, and there's some of the worst artifacts out there.
Including Alice's mirror from Alice in Wonderland. So this has gone on, and now in this most recent episode, we're beginning to realize that Artie's darkness is being released from within. And all of his encounters with Brother Adrian may not have been real encounters. They may have actually just been his guilt.
Yes, yes, we have to tell you, Artie is crazy pants because the evil that he could not contain is the evil within.
And in a very sick and very sad twist, now again, death is not always final on this show, as we have witnessed with many of our agents having died and been brought back in various fashions. But I have a feeling that the death we've witnessed in episode 9 may actually be the death that sticks.
It and may well.
It's a really sad moment because the actress who plays Lena, Janelle Williams, has been with the show since the beginning. And while Lena, I always felt, was dramatically underutilized in the series, she has
tragically,
she has often provided that sense of warmth and gentle home that these characters who are going all over the world and dealing with these really crazy stuff really need.
She is the classic innkeeper trope in fantasy.
Yes, and she has been wonderful about it. She's the Tika character from the Dragonlance series that Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman wrote.
Ah.
Now, in the closing moments of this last episode, the fabulous CCH Pounder, as Mrs. Frederick, has realized that it is Artie who is the danger. And Artie and Alina is alone in the warehouse with Artie, and Mrs. Frederick orders Lena to leave immediately. But Lena can't leave Artie as he's standing there ranting and obviously in agony and tearing himself apart on the inside. And then there's this momentary scene, and the next time we see Lena, she's laying in a pool of blood. And all of the agents are racing back to the warehouse, and of course the episode ends. And it was a very heart-pounding moment in a series that tends to not take itself too terribly seriously.
It's hugely campy.
And it embraces its campiness. With big brawny arms and squeezes it. We love that about the show. And so this was it's a really harsh moment. So this coming Monday, October 1st, will be the mid-season finale for season 4. The episode is entitled, We All Fall Down. For those of you who have never tuned into Warehouse 13, you can watch the first 3 seasons on Netflix streaming. I encourage you to check it out. It is truly, for science fiction fans, it's a very lovely series.
And on to another very lovely series, long-running series, is Doctor Who. This past week on Saturday, we had episode 7-5 called The Power of 3, or as I like to call it, Failure Cubed. People, it is time that we put an end to the pawns. And I do, as I said in last week's episode, have it on good authority that the pawns shall go. I have a friend on his way to Germany that actually told me, wave goodbye to the pawns for me. He was so happy that maybe when he comes back, they shan't be there. In the description for this week's episode, we hear that the Weeping Angels are coming back. The Weeping Angels are one of the great creations of sci-fi fantasy television. As we've explained before, they touch you and they soak up the energy of your entire future by sending you into the past. This week's episode promises to introduce Weeping Cherubs, or baby weepers. So this should be epic, folks. And I hope that they gnaw the ankles of the pawns clean off. In Failure Cube, we're given this great premise of black cubes dropping on the earth, all over the earth, in huge quantities. And these black cubes do nothing. They do nothing for so long that we grow complacent with them. We poke them, we prod them, we freeze them, we burn them, we send them into outer space. Nothing happens with these cubes. We become complacent. They stack up like iPods. We have them in our houses. We put our drinks on them. And then they begin to flicker. They begin to open up. And what I found to be most compelling about this episode is that when the cubes became active, the cube that each of the characters faced matched their personalities completely. Amy Pond's cube stabbed her in the hand. Hi, that's what she does to my eyes every episode. Okay, Rory's cube kept teasing him with opening on the opposite side from the one he was facing. If there was ever a frustrated man, children, it is Rory Pond Williams, okay? And the frustration of running back side to side on this cube matched his personality completely. Then we have the doctor, whose cube began to float around his head and then shoot at him. And again, I think you know why he was perfectly matched to his cube. Each cube really did have its own personality. So we're expecting an epic show. Sorry, this thing fell apart in the third act. Nothing of import happened. We all of a sudden are faced with these new, I think, I'll have to ask some of my Doctor Who aficionados, characters who are the exterminators of the universe. Again, great. So they might not be new, but they do very little with them. And it becomes this love letter to the Doctor and the Pawns. And people, if we cared, it might have been sweet. But I swear, I do not. And it resolved so neatly in the end that it bored me. I will not spoil this for you because Heather hasn't seen it and she's giving me the glare. But it wrapped up so neatly and so easily. This is magical, but not in a way that I could enjoy. So stay tuned for episode 7.6 next week. At least there will be weeping angels and hopefully they will kill the pawns.
Alrighty, and on that cheerful note, we're going to pop over and talk about Revolution for a moment. This has been the new series that is on NBC by J.J. Abrams, Eric Kripke, Jon Favreau, and stars the fabulous Billy Burke. Now, you'll notice I'm not going to list anybody else who stars in the show. And while I do recognize there are other fabulous actors in the show, Billy Burke has totally won me over. I'll watch it just for him after this last episode.
Let's not forget Giancarlo Esposito, the two of them.
Love him too, but you know what? Honestly, right now, I have to say, I'm going to be watching Revolution next week purely to see if Billy Burke needs to kick somebody else's ass, because the man can fight. And I was laughing because I was doing my research to get ready to talk about the show today. You know, I haven't totally paid as close attention to the show as I normally would, because I'm trying to divorce myself from the, oh, I'm going to tear apart every nuance. Miles Matheson, who is the character played by Billy Burke, is a former U.S. Marine Corps sergeant. Now, as you all, if anybody listening has read my books, you know I know that there's no such thing as an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. And Miles Matheson is a brilliant Marine.
Yes.
He can take on 2 men, 12 men, 20 men. He can take them all down.
With a sword.
With a sword. Or with his hands cupped.
Yes, that was great.
That was great. Charlie grew on me a little bit more. That'd be the young girl whose life we're following. Again, this is more of a YA dystopian than it is a darker adult dystopian, although I think they're going to have their darker dystopian moments. We learned some things. Spoilers, darling. Gee, big surprise. Elizabeth Mitchell's character is not dead. Yeah, that did not shock me. Sorry.
Okay, for everybody who's wondering, this is the season of the mom. On Hawaii 5-0. Oh my God, Mom, you're not dead. Yeah. Like on every show this season and a little bit going into last season, every show, including Warehouse Start 13, had the theme of, oh my God, Mom, you're not dead. Well, nothing
Mom,
is
you're involved, yes.
Oh yeah, Mom, you're involved in some way and not dead. And this show is no different. Charlie's mom is, as Heather said, alive.
And, you know, we were led to believe, of course, in the premiere episode that she had died. Although they never actually said she died. Although they did mention, and then again, they mentioned it in the second episode that she did. Charlie is 18 years old. She grew up in this post-apocalyptic, I guess, if you say, when all the power went out 15 years before, that was the apocalypse. And she was encouraged by her mother from a very young age to always watch her brother. So we get a little more insight into the character of Charlie. And I will say that her little 20-second, 30-second scene with Nate, I felt much better about the character because not only did she hear Nate tromping through the woods following her, Nate, by the way, for those of you just tuning in or didn't know, was the malicious soldier.
Yes, the hot First Nations bad boy, who was also in Twilight, for those of you who'd like to know.
Yeah, and he was the one who actually saved Charlie in last week's episode and then turned out to betray Charlie and then save Charlie again. So we really don't know whose side Nate is on, although when she asked him the question after she catches him, she chains him or handcuffs him to this thing and is going to leave him there. And she says, so why are you following me? And it's like, that's his mission because he's got to catch her uncle. I got a point here. There's actually a funny line.
Okay.
So she catches him. She says, you know, so why was, if all you're using me for is to bait out my uncle, why did you save me? And he doesn't really answer. And all I can think is, honey, he wants a booty call. Why else would he save you? Have you seen the women in this world?
Okay. I was about to say, Nate is on Team Poontang. Okay. That's all he's looking for.
So, one other moment that really stood out for me in the episode, and sadly, even with Elizabeth Mitchell's character being alive and being held by the big bad in this so far that we've met, the General Monroe, who, as it turns out, was also Miles' former buddy.
Yes, I thought that was nice.
Yeah, but I think him being Miles' former buddy was more interesting to me than the fact that he's holding Rachel, played by Elizabeth Mitchell, hostage. That just kind of fell flat for me. I don't really care, and they haven't shown me why I need to care, other than this is the mom to these two kids. So we'll see where they go with that. The only other moment that really stood out for me was the Maggie moment. Now, Maggie is the British doctor midwife character who was apparently either dating or hanging out with Charlie's father. And Charlie, in fact, a stepmom type character. Charlie was not thrilled with this woman, and it's obvious she resents her presence in their lives, but she is along on this journey. And there's this moment where you discover that Maggie has an old iPhone that she carries around with her. She has all these supplies. They're looking for food and water. They're trying to stay alive, but she keeps this iPhone.
She's also got poison whiskey for poachers. I love that.
See, that she's very smart. I'll give her that. But when she's asked about why does she keep this iPhone when they can't power it, everything else, and she tells people because it has pictures of her children on it. The only pictures she has. She has no physical pictures. She's from England. She was trapped in the United States when all the power went out. She's never seen her kids again, has never been able to get to her children again. And she keeps that iPhone because it's the only thing she has left that she, if they could maybe ever turn it on, she would be able to see her kids again. And as a mom, yeah, they got me with that.
That was great.
So, yep, see, here we are two episodes in. Heather's still watching. So I would say tune in, check it out. Ratings seem to be saying that their people are enjoying it, although it's got some very stiff competition on Monday nights.
Yes. Two great villains, I must say. And one of the things that I like most is when a villain is somewhat right while being terribly wrong. And what they've done with the Giancarlo Esposito character, whose name escapes me again, people, I don't know what's going on. He has a reason, or at least he has an excuse for why he does what he does, which is without the Monroe tyranny, there would be no order. That's what he says. Of course, we could have a better leader than Monroe, who is the big bad in the show. But there was something to that of him saying he's on the side that's winning and there is some sense of order. The gentleman who plays Monroe had a wonderful intensity and this sense that he is crazy and will whip out knives and do very bad things. But also this idea that he has some sense of honor, some code, which is still jacked up. Oh, no, he won't torture you. He'll just rip out your guts with a knife.
And here's a little spoiler alert. In the preview for next week, we learn a little secret about Mr. Miles, my favorite character. He was one of the founders of the Monroe Militia.
Which is not surprising because those two characters were together when the power went out.
Okay, so moving on and getting close to wrap it up here. Just want to do a real quick touch on the Big Bang Theory. That debuted again and is back for season, I believe it is 6 now, with our lovely friend Howard up in space and still being yelled at by his mother. And yes, I have to say one of my favorite lines in the entire episode did come from Howard when his mother was saying, "Can you hear me?" And he responds, "I can hear you without the phone, Mom." The thing about a sitcom like Big Bang Theory, because it is such an homage to so many different things that we all love, and as we as nerds and geeks and even two chicks talking about, you know, our favorite spec fic can appreciate, you know, it was rather uneventful in the great grand scheme of things. It didn't really change anything. Leonard's still being stupid about Penny. She's still being stupid about Amy. Amy's still just annoying. And Raj is lonely. The biggest change was the addition of Stewart to the full-time cast, Stewart being the comic book shop owner. And now Raj has a new friend. I'm sure Howard will be jealous when he gets back from space.
Okay, well, so we are wrapping up. I wanted to have a moment of silence for one of my favorite sci-fi comedies to be introduced in recent years, the show called Better Off Ted. It took place in a research facility where they created all types of science, and it often went wrong. The main character, Ted, was the leader of an R&D team, I do believe. Things just went wrong in spectacular ways. For example, there were some door sensors, a security system put in at their office building, and for some reason it couldn't see black people. Hilarious. Yes, it is just the sensor would not recognize black people. You will die. Watch that. The DVD collection is out from the first and sadly aborted season. It's a lot of fun. And the question that I have for Heather is Lost Girl, which is a Canadian show about a succubus in the world of the Fae that has now come to the U.S. and is on Syfy. Is it worth a look, Heather?
I think it's absolutely worth a look. I have only managed to catch one episode. I freely admit that. It is the first season will be out on DVD here in the States this October. So I'm hoping Netflix will add it to its streaming so I can catch up there. But the one episode I was able to watch, it's dark, it's sexy, it doesn't necessarily play to every trope, and yet it will take some cliches and turn them right on their head. And it doesn't shy away from those hard facts, the things that, you know, if you're a succubus, it's got to suck sometime.
Yes. And, nut. And, you know, there's something interesting about the fact that she is truly bisexual.
Yes. I don't think we would have gotten that on an American show.
I don't either.
There's too many prudish responses to that type of thing, although we've gotten a lot more open with having regular gay and lesbian characters on television. 10 years ago, you could not say that. It was still a big stunt to have a gay character on your show. But I think the fact that you've got a main character who is truly bisexual, who truly enjoys both male and female, and is utterly believable in that part, and it just adds to the texture of the show without taking it over. Obviously, there's a sexual component. She's a succubus. Hello.
And she's mostly in love with a werewolf who is hot. Oh, wow. What?
Yes, it's like prerequisite. If you're going to be a werewolf on television, you better be good looking. And now I'm going to take one quick second in my last question of the day.
All right.
As we're counting it down, and Heather will be much more enthusiastic about this. We are 13 days away as we record this. From the debut of season 4 of Vampire Diaries.
Yes.
So expect to have some squeaky moments with Heather as she dissects the episodes. Although for a full dissection, you'll have to go to my blog, and I'll be sure to include the links to that with the show where we discuss it.
Yes, her weekly postmortems are quite popular. There will be many, many panty twisters when we get into that. Also, our beloved Fringe is coming back. We've got Once Upon a Time on Sunday night, kicking off our week. Oh, people, we are going to misbehave on next week's show. And so you need to be there. So,
thanks for tuning in. Come back and see us next week. If you've got questions, don't hesitate to send them.
We will have an email for you to do so. You can even talk crap to us because we really enjoy that kind of thing.
Just be prepared. If you snark at us, be snark back.
That's right. We've got snarker rifles. We're not afraid to use them.
Have a good day.
Bye.